MacCast, Sunday, January 10th, 2021. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. Glad to be back here with you for another week of Apple and Mac news, information, all the fun tips and tricks, your feedback, and a whole lot more. Hope you are having a better week, I guess I should say, this past week. Yeah, let's not even get into it. Let's get into the good stuff. Let's get into some Apple and Mac news, some geeking out. I love hanging out with you, and hopefully this gives you a little reprieve from what's happening out there. And I'll just say this, let's just all look out for each other and take care of each other. You know, this community is super awesome. I am available if folks want to talk. Doesn't even have to be Mac related. You can email me, let me know what's going on. And, you know, reach out to the community and get support if you need it. And again, I hope everybody's staying as happy and safe as possible out there. It's just been a weird year. And of course, 2021 has started off a little bit odd as well. So let's just hope everything gets better from here. And to that end, something that could be better is just geeking out on Apple Mac stuff. So looking at the notes, we've got quite a few things to talk about. We're going to get into AirTags. Yep, those are still around and might be happening. Actually, it's looking like it's getting pretty close. We'll talk about what that means. New products for Apple, including AR products, possibly Apple Car coming. We've got some news in the Apple Car front. Going to talk about what might be next for iPhone and iPhone 13, also iPad changes coming in 2021, and a little bit about the next steps or predictions for Apple Silicon, I guess is how we should say it. And that's going to round out the news for this week. In the feedback section, I have upgraded to Big Sur finally, and I will give you my first impressions. We're going to try to debunk and demyth Thunderbolt and USB 4, get you some information about that, because frankly, I found it confusing and I looked into it a little bit this week and found out some information. So I'm going to share that with you. I have a question about moving files to the iPad from the Mac. And a little tip or information about setting up a new operating system cleanly on a Mac, and a little gotcha that you could run into. So it should be a great show. I say we just dive right into things, starting off with AirTags, rather. YouTuber John Prosser claims to have gotten his hands actually on an actual video from a software engineer showing off AirTags. And if you've seen his piece over on YouTube, what it looks like is it could be the opening animation video for when you pair an AirTag with your device. So you know how when you pair your AirPods, you get that little animation? It'd be similar to that. And what the video shows is a small circular device. To me, it looks kind of like a smooth white button on one side, and then there's a metal disc on the back that's etched with all of the Apple information, including the Apple logo, you know, designed by Apple in California, made in China or Vietnam or wherever it's made. I don't remember the specific location, but that's on the back. So it seems very similar to renders that we've seen in the past. But the difference here, again, is that it is a video. And that means that, you know, Apple has these things pretty ready to go. In case you don't remember what AirTags are, these are item trackers, device trackers designed to keep track of and help you locate your items that would integrate with the Find My app. There has actually been some references already to it in the iOS betas. They are expected to use Apple's, or not just Apple's, but overall ultra-wideband technology, and possibly take advantage of some augmented reality to actually overlay and show you where your lost items are when you're out and about looking for them. So ultra-wideband gives you the ability to get really precision pinpoint close to your items, so it should be great if you've lost your keys in the house, something like that. Prosser also says that the way the technology works is actually by pinging off other iPhones. So if you've lost something when you're out and about, what it's going to do is any nearby iPhones will kind of report the location of that item or that object. Of course, all anonymously. It's not going to like be throwing your device information or sharing device information with those other devices. And I would presume it would be sort of an opt-in or opt-out network, probably an opt-in option to participate in that. But I have a feeling a lot of people would. I certainly would. And so that's sort of how it works. So the thought as to why we've been hearing about AirTags, why it looks like they're ready to go, and I think even in the video, Prosser says, hey, these things have been ready to go for a long time. But the thought as to why Apple hasn't released them yet is because of this sort of mesh aspect to it. People have to be out and about for the AirTags technology to really work. And with the current situation of the pandemic, of course, you know, a lot of us aren't leaving the house. A lot of us aren't going out. People are saying staying safe. So overall, Apple's just been delaying the release. These things apparently have been ready to go for a while. Now, when are we actually going to see them in reality? Well, the video, like I said, makes it look like it's getting closer. According to some reports, the release is now slated for possibly this spring, depending. Ming-Chi Kuo has just said AirTags are due out sometime in 2021, so sometime this year. So it's not really clear at this point. But another factor sort of pointing to the fact that these things might be close to getting an announcement is we've also started seeing leaks from accessory makers like Nomad of different AirTag-related products. So they've had leaked images of a keychain and a glasses holder that would work with AirTags. Basically, you'd be able to slot the little AirTag puck or the little AirTag button into like a keychain or the glasses strap. They call it a glasses holder, but it's basically like that strap that goes on your glasses to hold them on your head, and then it would have the AirTag attached to the strap. So all of these signs pointing to AirTags coming out probably soon. I could see it happening in the first quarter of this year, so maybe along with some of the other announcements we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. So AirTags could be coming. You know, I'm kind of excited about these. They look like an interesting product. It's going to be interesting to see how they fit in the marketplace. And of course, pricing is going to have a lot to do with, you know, how well they may be adopted or how excited I am about them. I do worry a little bit that they might be a little bit pricey, but that's usually what happens with Apple products, right? But are you getting excited about these? Let me know your thoughts. MacCast@gmail.com. While we're on the subject of future Apple products or upcoming Apple products, we've also started hearing a little bit more about what could be Apple's first augmented reality product. This time, Ming-Chi Kuo says he believes that Apple will release its first augmented reality device in 2021. Details on what that product will be are pretty minimal, but in the past, Kuo has mentioned that an augmented reality glasses product would probably be the first thing that Apple puts out, that it would be specifically tied to the iPhone, basically an iPhone accessory, really acting like a display only, with processing apps, networking, and all that other stuff happening on the iPhone. Now, that's what Ming-Chi Kuo has said in the past. He didn't really comment on it in this latest research note, just simply that he expects the augmented reality device to come out sometime in 2021. Now, Bloomberg has made other claims in the past about the AR glasses, saying that the device actually may have an Apple-designed system-in-package chip very similar to the S-series processor that's in the Apple Watch. They also mentioned that the product would be running an iOS-based operating system. They dubbed it ROS. Augmented reality OS, I guess. But so, you know, what the product might be could be very different depending upon what Apple is up to. Now, Bloomberg also mentioned in the past that Apple possibly has two strategies for augmented reality and AR VR product. So there would be AR glasses that would be a little bit I guess, less complicated, probably something more in line with what Ming-Chi Kuo was mentioning, just kind of an accessory for iPhone that would be mostly simply a display. And they've said Apple is also working on a more robust augmented reality VR headset. And so that could be the thing that they're alluding to with the whole Apple design custom silicon chip and operating system. So it's sounding like what we're hearing about right now is probably the former product, the little bit more simpler product, maybe the first product that Apple puts out. So it could be the kind of thing where maybe there's an AR glasses, kind of like they did with, I'm thinking maybe kind of like they did with AirPods, where we get the AR glasses first generation product kind of simpler, and then maybe you get a pro product down the road that iterates on that. So that could be what's happening. The only other thing we're hearing in this AR space is that DigiTimes has claimed that Apple AR glasses, a prototype version of it, is starting to enter the second phase of development. What that second phase is, really don't know, but we could get AR glasses from Apple sometime in 2021. My guess, and they haven't been really talking about a potential release date, but my guess is it'd be toward the end of the year. This feels like a product that's still very much in development from Apple and probably not ready for prime time. We're not getting the kinds of rumors that are pointing to, you know, a lot of images, a lot of information in some of the software betas and those sorts of things. And when that stuff starts to happen, that's when we start to feel like we're getting closer to the actual launch of a product. So don't think it's happening quite yet, but could come in 2021. Sticking on the upcoming potential products from Apple and in the future, we've got some Apple Car news, and it's pretty interesting because it's taking the Apple Car project a lot closer to reality, although depending upon who you're talking to, it may still be several years out. We're not going to get an Apple Car this year, let me just tell you that. But what we are hearing right now is there's a report from Reuters citing the Korea IT News saying that Apple and Hyundai are partnering on the Apple Car. Now, earlier in the week, we heard Hyundai confirmed to CNBC that they were in discussions with Apple about the project, or rather that Apple was reaching out to a lot of car manufacturers talking about the project, but they later revised that statement to remove any mention of Apple. So I think they had a little slip up there. They probably got a call from Apple PR and had to amend their statement. But right now, a lot of signs, a lot of reports pointing to the fact that Apple might be partnering with Hyundai for the Apple Car, or at least in talks with Hyundai about that. It's believed that if Apple were to go forward with Hyundai, vehicles would be manufactured at an existing facility they have in Georgia. It's actually owned by Kia Motors. They're a affiliate of the Hyundai Motor Group, and that could be one way they go. There's also some reports saying that they may invest in a brand new U.S. plant to produce these cars. The goal would be to produce about 400,000 vehicles annually. And the report says that a beta version, quote unquote, of the Apple Car could be released as early as 2020. Now, I'm taking that word released with a grain of salt. I'm guessing what they mean is that Apple could have prototype cars available and be doing testing as early as 2022. As far as when actual production might be happening, that's rumored to be possibly happening around 2024. So we're at least 3 years away from a potential Apple Car, and even that might be a little bit aggressive. In a separate report from Bloomberg, they claimed that the Apple Car was, quote, nowhere near the production stage and could be ready in maybe 5 years to 7 years. So much further out. And Bloomberg also did note in the report that Apple is actively hiring engineers for the project. As a matter of fact, they've more recently hired a former vehicle engineer from Tesla. We know they've hired several engineers and VPs from Tesla and BMW and a bunch of other car companies. So they're definitely working on something. There's still some rumors, too, also pointing to the fact that Apple might be just working on a self-driving car system that they might try to still license out to other companies. Although, to me, that doesn't feel very Apple-like. This partnership with Hyundai for a production feels more like the route that Apple would want to go. But we're probably talking several years down the road. I kind of think that I would agree with Bloomberg a little bit more. I think 3 years would be very aggressive for Apple to have an Apple Car out, or 3 or 4 years. 5 to 7 feels a little bit more realistic to me. But it'll be interesting to see what happens, because as self-driving cars and electric cars continue to progress and more car companies get involved with it, Apple probably does have to step up their timeline a little bit. And at least we know they have the resources to probably be able to do that. So if they need to step things up, they can probably take it to the next level. But again, Apple is generally pretty cautious, and they're not always first to market with a bunch of new technologies and products. They usually try to be there and be the company that kind of takes it to the masses. So cars are a little bit different animal, though. So it'll be interesting to see the way this one plays out. But it's sounding like, again, they're at least actively looking for partners, and Hyundai might be at the top of that list currently. Bunch of new features coming for the iPhone in 2021, the iPhone 13. DigiTimes claims that Apple's LiDAR camera technology will be available for all the iPhone models in 2021. So all iPhone 13s getting that LiDAR technology that is only currently in the iPhone 12 Pro models. Taiwanese supply chain sources are also claiming that the iPhone 13 will expand on the 5G millimeter wave support, moving it outside the U.S. In this year's iPhones, millimeter wave is only available on the iPhone 12 in the United States. Millimeter wave networks, though, are expanding in countries like the UK, Germany, Canada, China, and Japan. And it would make sense that Apple would want to expand that technology in this year's iPhones to support some of the other countries that are coming on board with 5G millimeter wave. DigiTimes has also mentioned that Apple may be getting ready to place orders for new gallium nitride-based chargers for their upcoming products. They're likely looking to update their chargers to be smaller, something gallium nitride would allow them to do. I already mentioned the Anker 20-watt gallium nitride charger, which I got my hands on a couple of those. They are much smaller and about the same size as Apple's old 5-watt iPhone chargers. So they really make Apple's current 20-watt and 18-watt chargers look ginormous. So it would make sense that Apple's looking to make those a little bit smaller, makes them a little bit more convenient and just nicer to carry around. The iPhone 13 may also finally bring a ProMotion display to the iPhone. This is a rumor we'd been hearing about all last year and just didn't come to be on the iPhone 12. The site The Elec is claiming that both models of this year's iPhone 13 will use low-temperature polycrystalline oxide thin-film transistor OLED displays, that is a mouthful, made by Samsung Display. The LTPO technology should allow the displays to use a 120 Hz refresh rate due to having a much more efficient backplane. And actually, the displays are not just 120 Hz. They actually use a variable rate where they adapt the refresh rate depending upon what the application is. So if you're just reading text on the screen and not really scrolling or moving, or you're not doing anything intensive, it would ramp the refresh rate down to reflect that, or ramp it back up for more performance, and therefore that's how you gain some of that power efficiency. So that is ultimately going to help with things like battery life. So far, Apple has only used the ProMotion technology in the display on the iPad Pro, but it's looking like it could come finally to this year's iPhones. Also, a few other bits of information about the design of this year's iPhone. Design and sizes for the 2021 iPhones are expected to remain largely the same as this year's iPhone 12 models. There are reports that the body might get slightly thicker, and we're also hearing rumors that the rear camera bump might get a little bit of a redesign, with Apple considering a design where they may add a single piece of sapphire glass covering all three lenses to make them look more like a single camera. So you'd still have the three cameras under there, but just a single covering, which I think overall might look a lot nicer for the design. So I would look forward to kind of seeing that, kind of have just a big square piece of sapphire glass over all that. Could look really slick, I think. Apple also seems to be planning to release a second generation of the AirPods Pro and a third generation of the iPhone SE. This is according to the site Mac Attakara. They say it's going to happen in April of this year. They say that the new AirPods Pro will have a slightly narrower charging case. They don't go into many details as to why, but it could be enabled by some of the previous rumors that we'd heard that Apple is possibly looking to eliminate the stems on this year's AirPod Pro update. So the overall AirPods could get a little bit smaller, which may allow the case to get a little bit smaller. Unfortunately, the report did not give any details on what to expect with regard to the iPhone SE update, although I would imagine we'd at least see a processor update for the iPhone SE, probably not a design change. That tends to be Apple's, you know, entry-level, lower model phone, so they tend to not do too much with it, but that also should happen in April of this year. So announcement for new AirPods Pro and iPhone SE could be coming fairly soon. And that kind of rounds out the latest iPhone updates. Now moving on to iPad, what's going to happen with iPad in 2021? Well, Mac Attakara said in a report that they believe that the ninth generation entry-level iPad may get a design refresh. They claim that Apple is looking to make it thinner and lighter and may bring the design more in line with the third generation iPad Air. So if you remember what that device looked like, the iPad, entry-level iPad, might be getting a similar styling update this year. The display size would remain at 10.2 inches, and they say it would retain the Touch ID home button and the Lightning connector. It's interesting because with the home button, home Touch ID, excuse me, being moved to the button on the iPad Air, I thought Apple might take that opportunity to change more of their Touch ID iPads to use that design. Maybe that's something they want to keep unique to the iPad Air, and especially with the entry-level models, want to keep the home button styling, because the report also does mention that the iPad Mini should get an update as well. They claim that there's going to be a new version of the iPad Mini with a larger 8.4 inch display, but that its design will also be thinner and lighter with thinner bezels and gaining a design, you guessed it, similar to the iPad Air 3 design while retaining the home button and the Lightning connector. So both the kind of entry-level iPads getting a similar design refresh and retaining that home button and Lightning port. In addition, the report mentions the iPad Pro, claiming that its design this year will be largely unchanged, but that the processor will get a, quote, significantly improved processor. They also mention that the 12.9 inch iPad Pro model would be made slightly thicker to accommodate a new mini LED display. And we've been hearing that Apple is looking to move to mini LEDs across much of their line, including the iPad Pro. Originally, I think it was believed it would be both models, the 11 inch and the 12.9 inch, but currently we're hearing that it may be reserved for simply the 12.9 inch model. In other reports, Ming-Chi Kuo said he believes that the next iPad Mini would actually have a mini LED display, but that was not specifically mentioned in the Mac Attakara report. As far as when we might see the iPad updates, Mac Attakara says that the iPad and the iPad Mini updates, so that would be the entry-level iPad and the iPad Mini, those are slated to happen sometime in March. And then finally in the news for this week, Apple Silicon market share is expected to increase in 2021. Now that might seem obvious given the fact that we are expecting Apple to release more Apple Silicon-based Macs in 2021, but the rate of increase might surprise you a little bit. TrendForce says that the estimated market share for Apple's Silicon Macs is currently about 0.8%, but they are expecting that Apple could increase that to 7% by this summer with the release of some new Apple Silicon systems, including the rumored 14-inch MacBook Pro and the 16-inch MacBook Pro. Both those updates together could significantly increase the market share of Apple's silicon-based Macs. As for the rumors of Apple getting mini LED displays in all Macs this year, it's looking like that might not happen, at least for one model. We'd been hearing that Apple was looking to bring mini LEDs to everything, including that 14-inch and 16-inch MacBook Pro, but a new report from DigiTimes says the mini LED display in the MacBook Air is not expected to happen until sometime in 2022. And that sort of makes sense because Apple tends to bring those new technologies to their Pro models first, and then it will slowly trickle down and make its way to other models, including more of the consumer-level models. So looks like, again, with the rumor of just the iPad Pro 12.9-inch getting the mini LED display and maybe the MacBook Pros getting mini LED displays and not other models, that is the trend that Apple will continue to use in 2021. So that's kind of the latest on Mac news, and that will do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Helix Sleep. Look, dealing with sleeping issues on your Mac is annoying, but dealing with sleeping issues due to having the wrong mattress can literally be a pain in the back. And I know because I've been there. I think we all have. You know, the Apple Watch has sleep tracking because we know how important it is to get a good night's sleep. And we all deserve a great mattress that fits our unique sleep style, and that's where Helix Sleep comes in. They help you get the right mattress with their 2-minute quiz. You can take it right now. Just go to helixsleep.com/maccast. What it does is basically walks you through a series of questions so that they can match your body type and your sleep preference to the perfect mattress for you. It even works for couples. They offer a bunch of different mattress types, from soft to firm, and mattresses great for cooling you down if you sleep hot. They even have a Helix Plus mattress for plus size folks. Look, I tend to sleep on my side, and I really like a firmer feel to my mattress, so I took the quiz, and it recommended the Twilight model to me. It came, and it is great. I loved not having to go to a showroom or deal with all of that, and the unboxing experience of getting a mattress at home is just pure fun. It's really neat. The mattress has, for me, the perfect amount of firmness and support while being soft and comfortable, and I am sleeping great. The pets are too. So if you're looking for a mattress, you take the quiz, you order the mattress that you're matched to, and the mattress comes right to your door, shipped for free. You don't ever need to go to the mattress store again. And believe me, that is a bonus. Helix is awesome. You don't need to take my word for it. Helix was awarded the number one best overall mattress pick of 2020 by GQ and Wired Magazine. They also have a 10-year warranty, and you get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. They'll even pick it up for you if you don't love it, but I guarantee you, you will. Helix is offering up to $200 off all mattress orders and 2 free pillows for MacCast listeners. Visit helixsleep.com/MacCast. That's helixsleep.com/MacCast. Take that quiz, get the perfect mattress for you, and get up to $200 off and those 2 free pillows. Big thank you to Helix Sleep for their support of the MacCast. So I did it. I finally pulled the trigger. As you know, I am not one to rush with, especially my production system, to upgrade to the latest and greatest operating system from Apple. So up until this week, I had been running still macOS Catalina quite happily, and I decided it was time. I think 11.1, or is it 11.1 yet? Yeah, we're up to iOS 11 now, right? Or macOS 11. Jeez. run a little bit crazy. But they came out with 11.1, so I figured they kind of worked the bugs out of the system, and it was probably time that I get on the latest and greatest, especially since, you know, we have to talk about it here on the MacCast. So I started to get a lot more questions about Big Sur, those sorts of things. So I thought I'd share my first impressions with you. You know, my first impression is I kind of don't like it. And I don't know if it's just because I'm getting older and maybe more set in my ways and more of a curmudgeon. I'm starting to feel like that. But and to be honest, it probably is going to grow on me. But, you know, this one has some major UI changes. It is a pretty aggressive UI change, which is nice. I'm happy that Apple is doing it. But some of the decisions are a little bit confusing to me. And then just other things just look a little bit weird. Like I said, I think in time I will get used to a lot of it. But right now it is pretty jarring, I have to say. And it's bothering me a little bit. So I'm just trying to be honest with you here and tell you what I think. And I'm going to be really curious to know what you think, because I haven't heard anybody else in our community comment on this, this sort of radical change. And there's other changes that are just peripheral changes, I guess. Things like my GarageBand no longer has a media browser in it, and that was a feature I use to produce the MacCast. So I hate it when Apple takes features away that I really rely on. And it's such a silly feature because it's a convenience feature, really. It allows me to, when I get audio comments from listeners, to bring those into the show more easily, because I can point to a folder with the media browser where those audio clips are, and then I can just drag them in from within GarageBand. So what has to happen now is I actually have to open a Finder window and just drag and drop it into GarageBand. Not that much more complicated, but different, right? So little things like that just start to grate on you a little bit. And I guess that's maybe where I am a little bit with the user interface. I mean, let's just face it. First and foremost, the dock icons are weird, right? They're square. They look like iOS icons. The dock itself is rounded off like it is on iPadOS. And I get, you know, we're trying to get to a more consistent user interface. But, you know, looking at my Mac dock right now, it does look weird. And especially the few apps that I have in there that haven't updated their app icons yet. And we already talked about that I gave you that site a while back, a few shows back, where you can find icons that are in the new Big Sur format. So if you have an app that doesn't have the icon shape that is square, you can find a replacement icon for it. And that's a great site. But, you know, like my Vision icon is not that, and my ReadKit icon is not squared off, and I'll need to go back and replace those. The bummer about those icons is they do get replaced when the software updates, so you have to constantly sort of reapply them. So hopefully more developers will just adopt the new square format, and it won't continue to look a little bit weird. But right now, it's a little bit weird, I have to admit. The other thing is the sidebar colors and icons being the little line icons. That's a little bit, I don't know what the right term for it is. It's not bad, it's just different. And when I look at my Finder or I look at my various applications, especially ones that are in the three-column format like Mail, you know, it doesn't feel familiar anymore. Maybe that's more what it is. It's just, you know, it's not the familiar operating system that I've been used to looking at. And I guess that's ultimately the point, but not liking it currently at the moment in the first week of using the new operating system. A few other things, the transparent menu bar, that I really kind of don't like. And the fact that I can't really turn it off or control it or change it bothers me a little bit. I thought there'd just be a setting to say, hey, I don't want a transparent menu bar that just blends into my desktop background. But you really don't have that option. You can use the accessibility features. So if you go into System Preferences, Accessibility, and choose Reduce Transparency, you can get the white menu bar back. But the problem is that changes the transparency every place else. So then you end up with a white dock And I really don't like that. I do like the transparent dock. I just don't want a transparent menu bar. So there are also apparently some third-party solutions out there. I looked into them. Really only one of them looked very good to me. And unfortunately, it was a paid app. And this, you know, getting rid of the transparent menu bar isn't important enough to me and doesn't bother me enough to pay for it. But if I could just do a terminal command or some sort of setting, that would be awesome. But that doesn't look like it's possible. There was kind of an open source one, but it was doing some weird thing where it was basically just drawing a new menu over top of the existing menu using Apple script, and that just sounded a little bit too kludgy for me, so I wasn't really interested in doing that. But I don't know. Do you guys like this transparent menu bar? Again, it's just really bothering me. And then the menu drop downs with the rounded corners instead of square at the top, that's weird. Let's see, what else? The rounded dock I already mentioned. Oh, and the new modals. So when it pops up a modal to ask, hey, do you want to save this or confirm this? Those look really bizarre to me. Just they do not look like standard Apple windows or modal windows. And all of these things are adding up to make my experience feel foreign. I guess foreign is really, really a good way to describe it. But again, these are nitpicky things. Overall, it runs great. The upgrade went completely smoothly for me. I've experienced no issues. All my stuff is working. Haven't run across any bugs. Like I said, I haven't really used it very long. It's only been a few days now. But so far, that's fine. You know, the new operating system's great. I'm not really sure about any major new features. I guess you've got the widgets, you've got the not notification center, control center, which is nice. Again, a little bit odd. A lot of the things that are in that I just control from my normal menu bar items. So I don't know, can I turn those off? Can I get rid of them? I've got some discovery to do. And of course, as I find things and new things that I like or don't like, I'll certainly share those with you here on the MacCast, but I'd love to get some information from you. What kinds of things are you using in Big Sur? What new features are you really enjoying? What should I be looking at? And also, what are your, just your general thoughts, impressions, and opinions? Send your feedback, your comments to MacCast@gmail.com. Another thing that I took some time to dig into this week was Thunderbolt USB 4. And this was just really for my own knowledge, because you may have noticed the new M1 Max, the Apple Silicon Max, in the tech specs, they simply say that the ports on there are Thunderbolt. Apple doesn't say Thunderbolt 3 or Thunderbolt 4. They just say Thunderbolt / USB 4 ports. And that was a little bit odd. And I'd been hearing other sites talking about Thunderbolt 4, and I'm like, well, then why doesn't Apple have Thunderbolt 4 support yet? What is Thunderbolt 4 anyway? Is it different than Thunderbolt 3? What is going on? And what I discovered is, it turns out, and a lot of this information came from the folks over at OWC, Larry over there, turns out that Mac users basically already have Thunderbolt 4 if they have a Thunderbolt 3 Mac. So let me explain. The issue with Thunderbolt 3, or not really issue, the thing about Thunderbolt 3 is that it offered a bunch of different features. Things like 40 gigabit per second bandwidth, support for multiple displays, support for power delivery, and you didn't necessarily have to offer all of those features to say that you had Thunderbolt 3 on your product. Now, the reality is that Apple and the Mac did. Apple supported all of the features and functionality, basically the full Thunderbolt 3 spec. But on the PC side, it was not that way. Intel is the developer of Thunderbolt 3. Well, Thunderbolt, I think, is really an Apple marketing term, but the technology was developed by Intel. And Apple has always fully supported the full spec, but that was not going on the PC side. So with the release of Thunderbolt 4, Intel decided to say that, look, to be certified Thunderbolt 4, you have to basically support the full feature set of Thunderbolt 3. So at the end of the day, Thunderbolt 4 is really just a marketing term. And from an Apple user perspective, Thunderbolt 3 basically equals Thunderbolt 4. Now, I'm going to tell you there's one new feature and a great new feature that changes that a little bit. But ultimately, that's why in the tech spec, Apple is just calling it a Thunderbolt / USB 4 port. And if you actually go look at the details, they even say that the Thunderbolt port is Thunderbolt 3. But it's really also Thunderbolt 4, right? So just to make things a little bit confusing, just know Thunderbolt, as far as Apple goes, and that's why I think they're just using the term Thunderbolt, is the full Thunderbolt current spec, which according to Intel is Thunderbolt 4. So you have Thunderbolt 4. One of the new features of Thunderbolt 4, though, that's really exciting is hubbing. We can finally have a Thunderbolt hub. And that means we don't just have to chain Thunderbolt devices anymore. And what's nice about this is that it is a software update. So if you're running macOS Big Sur, you're going to get support for Thunderbolt 4 hubbing. Even if you have a quote-unquote Thunderbolt 3 port on your Mac, and OWC has actually already announced their first Thunderbolt hub. They are taking pre-orders for it right now. I will have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. It's not cheap, but at least it does open up hubbing. So basically, you can have three ports, you know, plug in one Thunderbolt port and get three ports out, and each one of those three ports is able to be chained. So you can imagine you can have many more Thunderbolt devices connected off of a single port on your Mac using a hub, just like we use USB hubs today. So that is pretty cool. Now, what about USB 4? Well, get this. Thunderbolt 4 is basically also USB 4 because Thunderbolt 4 is based on the same underlying protocol as USB 4. As you know, both USB-C, USB 4, and Thunderbolt use the same USB-C or USB-C type connector. So I guess I should clarify that again. We've talked about this in the past, but USB-C is really just a connector. USB 4 and Thunderbolt are the technologies that can use that connector, and they both use the same connector. So Thunderbolt 4 and USB 4 use the same underlying protocol. They're actually tightly connected. All Thunderbolt 4 devices support USB 4 and vice versa. USB 4 and Thunderbolt 4 are also backwards compatible with technologies. But the one thing you need to know that is a little bit different about USB 4 is that not all USB 4 devices are as powerful as Thunderbolt. Because again, Thunderbolt, if you're supporting the full spec like Apple does, supports 40 gigabit per second data transfer rates. USB 4 can actually run at two different transfer rates, either 20 gigabits per second or 40 gigabits per second. So you need to pay attention to what you're buying in terms of a USB 4 device to determine if you're getting the full spec or if you're getting half the spec in terms of the maximum data throughput. So there is a USB 20 or USB 2.0 or a USB 4.0 when it comes to USB 4, and you need to look in the marketing to see which one you're getting when you're buying a USB 4 device. So just be aware of that. And of course, it also gets a little bit worse when you're looking at Thunderbolt, when you're looking at USB 4 or USB cables, rather, or USB-C cables, I guess we should say, cables with a USB-C connector, because they are not all created equal. You're going to have a bunch of different types. There are USB 3.2 types that support either 5 gigabit, 10 gigabit, or 20 gigabit per second data transfer rates. Of course, those are not USB 4 cables. Those are USB 3 cables, and they come with different levels. And so you need to, again, pay attention to the marketing, look at what you're buying. Some of them will actually have little icons on them that will say 5, 10, or 20. Not all cables, though, will have that. So buyer beware. Also, different cables may or may not support power delivery or PD. There's also a logo for that. So USB 3 PD supports power delivery. And then USB 4 cables should have the power delivery built in. But again, you're going to have those USB 4 20 or 2.0 cables and the USB 4 40 cables, the ones that either support 20 gigabits per second data transfer rates or 40 gigabit per second transfer rates. So are you thoroughly confused yet? Because I certainly am. My advice would be to probably just go with always buying Thunderbolt cables, Thunderbolt 4 cables, because then you're going to have all the features and those are fully compatible with USB 4. They're going to be the USB 4 40 cables, basically. So you're going to pay a little bit more for them, but they're going to work with all the features and all the functionality. So if you're looking for that one cable, that's the way to go. As a matter of fact, the folks over at Acell this past week sent me a USB 4 40 cable to review. And I have to say, it works great with everything that I have. It is that one cable that we've been looking for. Got USB-C on both sides, works great with my MacBook Pro, works great with my iPad Pro, does power delivery, does full data transfer rate when I have compatible, you know, devices connected. So that is one to look at. And again, just pay attention to those specs. But I would go, you know, make sure you have a USB 4 40 cable or just a Thunderbolt cable, and you should be good to go. Again, Thunderbolt 3 or 4, which would have the USB-C type connector. So hopefully that makes things as clear as mud. Now, I think we helped demystify that a little bit. If you have additional questions, of course, you can always email me, maccast@gmail.com. Received an email this week from Laurel, who brought up an interesting question to me. She was looking for a way to copy MP3 files from the Mac directly into the Files app on an iOS device. And what she noted was attempting to copy songs by just dragging them onto the device icon in the Finder, for her, was making them sync to the Music app. I actually tried this, but it didn't work for me on my device, but I assume that's because I have iCloud Music Library turned on, because I think what happens when you try to just drag one in the Finder and you're not using iCloud Music Library is that it goes through the Music Syncing tab on the Mac. So I think that's what's going on there. What you can do, though, is you can copy files to specific apps using the Files tab in the Finder. So this is when you connect your device to your Mac with the latest operating systems that no longer have iTunes. So macOS Catalina, macOS Big Sur. What happens, of course, is your device mounts in the Finder just like it were a drive. But when you click on that, you get the old iTunes interface, and then you have all the different tabs. And you can set up syncing and those sorts of things if, again, you're not using iCloud syncing. So if you go to the Files tab, you'll notice applications that support transferring data directly to the app. You can get access to that, and you can drag and drop files and folders and things into those apps if they support those file formats. And if you have an app that does integrate with the Finder with the Files app, so has support for the file browser, you could copy the files from the Finder into that app, then access those files on your iOS device via the Files app, and then move them anywhere you want. So that might be something you could try, Laurel. But the easier thing to do, I think, would be to, if you have a Mac and an iOS device that supports Continuity, then you can actually simply copy from your Mac and then paste the files on your iPad. I think a lot of people, myself included, kind of forget that this feature exists, and it's really weird to wrap your head around. But again, if you have a iOS device and a Mac that supports Continuity, literally what you can do on either side is you can copy from one device and then paste into the other device. Now, you need to have, I think, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi turned on. You need to be on the same network, and you need, you know, both devices need to be on the same network, and you need to be logged in to the same iCloud account on both devices. But if you have all that set up, you can literally copy and paste from your iPad or your iPhone to your Mac and vice versa. So you could just simply select all the files on your Mac or a folder on your Mac, hit copy, so Command C, or just copy from the file menu, then open up your iPad, go into the Files app, navigate to where you want to paste those files. So I would assume you'd have a folder maybe for these MP3 files. Go into that folder or create that folder in the Files app, hit paste, and it literally should copy them right into that location on your iPad. So that's probably the easiest way to go to get files from your Mac onto your iPad, just a simple copy paste. Of course, there are also some third-party apps that you could potentially use. I like one called Yoink. I will have a link to it in the show notes at maccast.com. But basically, that app supports Continuity, and it tries to make the process a little easier by allowing you to basically drag and drop. So what Yoink does when you're running it on the Mac is it puts a little sidebar tray in. You can grab files or folders. You can put those into the sidebar tray. On the Mac, it makes it easy to just move files around, but with Continuity, what happens is once you've dropped those files into the sidebar, if you have the Yoink app open on your Mac, you'll get the little Continuity icon in the dock. You can click on that, and then it'll copy them into Yoink. And then Yoink does have integration with the Files app, so then you can go into the Files app, go under Yoink, you'll see the files there, and then you can just simply move them or copy them wherever you want to within the Files app. Lastly, probably the even easier thing to do, even easier than copy and paste in my opinion, is to think about if you have an iCloud account and you have enough storage to use iCloud Drive and specifically turn on the desktop and documents folders. So basically move your desktop and documents folders into iCloud Drive. I did this a couple years ago, and I have to say it's been life-changing to be able to have all of my documents from my Mac and my iPad just synced up. Everything in the documents folder is just always available to me on whatever device or whatever Mac I am working on, as long as they're all connected to the same iCloud account and sharing via iCloud Drive. Of course, I also have remote access to those via iCloud, which is another great bonus. And that goes for both files on my desktop and in my documents folder. So to enable this, all you have to do is make sure that you're signed into your Mac and all your iOS devices, of course, using the same iCloud account. Then you want to make sure that iCloud Drive is turned on your Mac and all your iOS devices. And then once you have that set up from your Mac, all you have to do is enable the desktop and documents folders. To do that, you just go into the Apple menu, you choose System Preferences, you click on Apple ID, and then click on iCloud. If you're on macOS Mojave or earlier, it's a little bit different. You're going to go into the Apple menu, choose System Preferences, then click on iCloud. Once you're in your iCloud settings, just make sure that iCloud Drive is turned on. And then next to iCloud Drive, click Options, and then choose Desktop and Documents Folders. Turn that on and click Done. Now, one thing to note about this, and just be aware of, because it can be a little bit confusing, if you set this up and turn on Documents and Desktop Folders, you're no longer going to have a document folder or a desktop folder in your home folder, they actually get moved to the iCloud Drive folder. So you need to look under iCloud Drive in the sidebar in the Finder in order to find them. So you're not going to find them in your home folder anymore. It's a little bit disconcerting the first time you do it, but eventually you will get used to it and it ends up being no big deal. But what's cool about this is once it's set up, again, anything that you place in your documents folder can also then now be accessed from files in the iCloud Drive folder because everything is going to sync through iCloud Drive. And so it's really great. If you haven't tried it out, I would recommend using it. Again, you will need to make sure that you have enough storage in iCloud. I ended up just buying more, and now I'm on the Apple Premier plan, so I've just rolled it into that. But I had already upgraded to the 2 terabyte program, so plenty of storage for what I need to do, and that is another way to go. I guess a last way to go is you can, of course, just use a flash drive, use a thumb drive. And I've been telling you they're a sponsor of the show, but these are absolutely perfect for this application, is the SanDisk iExpand drives, because you can connect them USB-C or USB-A right into your Mac, and then you can connect them to the Lightning port or the USB-C port on your iOS device. And with the latest versions of iOS in the Files app, connected USB drives will just mount, or Lightning drives will just mount in the Files app. So you could, you know, plug into your Mac, copy your MP3 files on to a USB thumb drive, and then just take it over to your device, plug it in, open up the Files app. It'll show up there in the sidebar, and you can just copy the files over that way. So I guess that's a last way that you can possibly do this transfer. Now, I've covered a bunch of different ways, Laurel. I bet you some folks in the community have some other tips and tricks for doing this. I'm sure there's some sort of method that I missed. If you do have that, send us a comment, or better yet, just give us the tip in an audio comment. Send those to maccast@gmail.com. But Laurel, I hope this information helps you out, and good luck getting those files moved from your Mac to your iOS device. And then finally for this week, I have a comment from a listener about a situation he ran into with trying to do a clean install of Mac OS onto his computer. Ran into a little bit of trouble, and I'll let him tell you all about it.
Hi, Adam. New from Israel here. Love the MacCast. Been following for a few years now. I have a 2013 MacBook Air, and up to now, all the updates I've done over the top. But with Big Sur coming out, and the fact that the Air will probably not support new OSs, I decided to format it and reinstall the OS. When selecting the format option, I selected APFS. When rebooting the Mac, it downloaded the relevant OS, which was Mavericks. And when I got the screen to select where to install it, nothing showed up. Well, Mavericks doesn't support APFS, so I needed to reformat to macOS Extended, and then I could install Mavericks. I hope this may help others that are thinking about formatting their Macs. Have a great day, Niv.
Hey, Niv, thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, that is a gotcha that I would imagine many people run into, especially if you have an older Mac and you're trying to do a clean install, because as you noted, it's going to try and grab whatever version of the operating system was appropriate for your Mac, I think, when you made the purchase. So you're going to get an older version potentially of the operating system. And now that we have a new file system, it may or may not be compatible, as you noted, with that version of the operating system. This is actually one of the reasons why I tend to recommend, when you're doing a Mac update, that you take a minute before you run the installer to build a USB installer for that new OS. I actually have a tin of USB drives, different USB drives that have installers for every version of Mac OS going all the way back to Mac OS Lion. So I can actually boot and install Mac OS Lion if I really wanted to. Obviously, I've never really used it, but it's nice to just be able to have those. And that way you don't have to rely on whatever OS Apple is trying to get you to download. You can just simply boot onto that USB drive and then install the latest and greatest version of that operating system when you're doing a clean install. It's also just great for troubleshooting, that sort of thing. It's nice to have a backup. Even though, you know, Apple does let you kind of do that remotely over the internet if you need to. But again, I think it falls back, as you noted, to whatever the appropriate operating system for your Mac was when you actually originally purchased it. I don't even know how that internet install would work, or more obviously doesn't work when you have formatted in a format that doesn't support that operating system. So I would really recommend making those USB sticks. It's pretty easy to do. As a matter of fact, Apple has a support article on exactly how to do it. I will link to it in the show notes at maccast.com, but it basically walks you through the process. You do have to use terminal and you have to enter a terminal command. So if you're a little bit squeamish about that, you know, don't worry, read the article because it's really a copy paste operation. The article walks you through all the steps. And what's really cool about this article is it actually has links to enable you to get copies of older versions of Mac OS, including and all the way up to the most current version, Big Sur. So it has copies of Big Sur, Catalina, Mojave, High Sierra, and El Capitan. So you can go all the way back, you can find those, and then you can build USB flash drives for each one of those. I would recommend, the article doesn't mention this, but I would recommend making sure you have a USB flash drive that's at least 16 gigabytes or larger. I think that's the minimum that will fit some of these operating systems. I ended up with Big Sur using a 64 gig stick because that's just what I had available. But once you have that, I don't even think you need to, I think this is correct, I don't even think you need to format the USB flash drive because that happens as part of the terminal command that you run. But basically, you'll just copy and run the appropriate command for whatever version of the operating system that you've downloaded. So from that site, you can download the package, the file, and then run this command line tool, and it will format the drive and install a bootable copy of that operating system. And then to boot from it, all you have to do is, if you have an Apple Silicon Mac, turn on the Mac with that drive installed and hold down the power button, or continue to hold down the power button until you see the boot options, and then you can select the USB drive and boot from it. On Intel Macs, you're going to press and hold the option key while booting up with that USB stick in your USB drive. Hold down option until you see the boot options and then select the drive, and you'll be able to boot off of it. So that would be my recommendation moving forward. Obviously, if you haven't planned for that, then just be aware that you're going to need to make sure when you're doing a clean install that you format the internal drive to what's appropriate for the file system that is original to your Mac. So great reminder and recommendation, Niv, and thank you for sending that in. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to take a quick moment and thank my show sponsor, Smile, makers of Text Expander and PDF Pen for both Mac and iOS. You can get more information and details on all of their great software by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CacheFly. You can find them at cacheFly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. They are at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you'd like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You're also welcome to call in on the listener hotline. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-I-AM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast. You can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast, or find me on Instagram, just MacCast on Instagram. But that is going to do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.